I'm Suen Ho, and I am an urban designer. And I was born in Boston when my parents were in graduate school over there. And then I grew up in Hong Kong, but I came back to the United States for college. And that's where I met my husband in graduate school.
One of the most beautiful aspects of the Garden of Surging Waves are the stories. Before we dive into the storytelling elements of the garden, I wanted to ask you about the story behind the project.
It's a strange story, but I have never done anything like a Garden of Surging Waves. So when the city of Astoria asked me to design and build a commemorative garden to tell the story about the early Chinese immigrants' contribution in the building and development of the city, I thought, why classical Chinese garden? And they said, well, because that seems to be the thing to do if you want to commemorate Chinese contributions. And I did a little bit of research of the city, which is the oldest U.S. settlement west of the Rockies. I realized that the research told me about the richness of the Chinese population, of their work. They built the jetties, they built the seawalls, they built the sewer system. Of course, there were thousands of them. They were working in the fish salmon canneries in the mid-1880s. And they have nothing to do with the classical Chinese garden style or stories, because classical Chinese gardens were designed for the elites, literatis, and Astoria is built by workers. Even today, they said, we ain't quaint, because they really believe in the working class. So I gained a little bit more insight of what they are about. And then, so I told them, they don't have the ingredients to make a classical Chinese garden successful, but they have a lot more to showcase. And we focus on changing that story to about them.
Tell me just a little bit more about urban design. What does an urban designer do?
My definition of an urban designer is you create an environment that is based on the surrounding built forms. So you are integral in a built setting, and then you add or subtract to it to enhance the place and give meaning and give quality of the environment for the people who live and work there.
Can you talk about what you mean by how to do it right? How were you able to explain how to do it right to the municipality that you were working with?
How to do it right. Maybe I will focus on the Garden of Surging Waves. This project has multifolds of needing one to do it right. First thing is I do not want this to be a reconciliatory kind of really sad story. So to pay homage to the people who were there before us, the people who were sitting at the project committee, the elders. There are only, like at that time, I think there were only like 60 or so Chinese living in Astoria, as opposed to the thousands, and they were there. So they are holding on to stories, history, their relationship of the place that they so connected to. So how to do it right when they were talking about needing to build classical Chinese garden. In order to do that right, I have no qualification. So I need to do something that I know I can be authentic. I can be honest. I can make decisions that are respectful. So when you have generations of families sitting at the same committee, a grandfather and granddaughter, they are sitting there staring at you. And then they said, okay, if we don't do classical Chinese garden, what are we going to do? I said, how you can tell your stories. But it's very interesting because they suggest that we want a pagoda, we want a moon gate, the features that are very typical in a classical Chinese garden. And yet this is a modern time, and how do we do that without making it almost like a fake theme park? You also need to build something that from day one, the city told me that we don't have money, but we want to do this really well. I cannot walk away from that, because if I walk away from that, if someone else came in and gave them a really cheesy theme park, I'm going to kick myself and say, hey, I could have done that better. So I thought I'll take that as a challenge. And then in order to do it right for this project, you have to also understand not just the history, the culture of the Chinese, but you also have to look at what is Astoria. It's at the coastal, it's actually, they want to correct, they're not a coastal town, they are a river town. They're at the mouth of the mighty Columbia River. And so it's, the climate is extremely hostile to any material you put in front. And for a city that starts their introduction saying that we don't have money, then you're not going to use anything that is going to be relying on a lot of expensive maintenance. Keep going back to paint or carb or whatever. So you know there will be minimum paint, minimum caulking, and anything that's going to fall apart is not going to be your ideal materials. So that means we need to look at what will last, and not just last, but can we celebrate aging? Can we say, you know what, this thing is rusty and that is beautiful. This thing is having patina and it's dripping onto the ground and it's making stains. We celebrate. It's just like the elders sitting in front of us, that they are aging, and you don't just call them, hey, you old person. You say, you're wise and experienced leader. You try to honor them. And I think for this project to do it right, you need to almost capture that kind of Chinese cultural value so that they can relate. And I think that's what I meant by doing right.
For other designers listening to this, was there a moment where you felt incredibly overwhelmed by this project? And how did you move through that?
Yes, it's incredibly overwhelmed with the level of a sense of responsibility. Going back to do it right. What can I do? But I think same thing with how I usually approach any client who values kind of my strategy or thinking. I really appreciate the fact that this project, the committee, the Chinese family, the group, and the city, I don't know if they are, how should I say, they have such open-mindedness. There's this mayor Van Dusen, who's going into his fifth term of being a mayor. You have elders and the younger generation sitting there, they really believe in this needs to be done. Because Professor Duncan Law is holding on to the last bit of effort to make a difference. and time's running out, you want to do this, but then yeah, we still have to do fundraising and city has a little bit of funding. And at the site originally was a small site, 5,000 square foot by the Riverwalk. And to make things even more complicated, it was an installation that was done by the late Robert Murasi, a very famous local Japanese descent landscape architect. He did what he did. The city hated it. They want me to do something on top of his to honor the Chinese. And you know, the Chinese and Japanese had such a kind of sad history in the past. And I just didn't know what to do. I thought, okay, well, how can I respect Robert Murasi and also the elders and the Chinese family, and which the site already been built. And yet, as I was pondering, that was my first like pondering moment. And then next thing, the mayor called me and said, don't worry about it, we demolished it. So it's clean slate for you. I thought, oh my gosh, this is horrible, but you got to move on, right? My jaw just dropped. So I thought, okay, deep in my heart, I need to do something to at least honor Robert Murasi, which there's a little bit of landscape rock that was left there. So I used that landscape rock and then the site that has an abandoned concrete dock. And I thought, okay, anything you demolish or move away will cost money. And that you don't want to spend money to make things disappear, then that's just wasting money. So I thought, okay, let's keep what is still there and work with it. And that became the a little bit of this history of how the design was kind of starting to form. There's this kind of little kind of a tartan grid, a 9-square grid that starting to give some relationship to Chinese design ordering, planning ordering, the process starting to become informed by the site. The other overwhelming moment was when the city liked the design so much that they said, well, let's move it. Let's move the garden to empty, not empty, but it's like a super blocked parking lot in front of City Hall. And we'll call it the Bicentennial Legacy Project. All of a sudden I have the sense of like, as if I'm just like a little toddler having the diaper just kind of fall off from my butt. It's like, what? What? Who am I to be given this incredible, honorable opportunity? And I have absolutely no portfolio to show that I know how to do it. And yet sitting in front of me are all the people looking at me with starry eyes and say, Swen, whatever you decide, we will support. I thought, this is unreal. This is unreal. I better do this right. So to go back to your little question about how to make this forward, I really did this in bite size. I think whatever we do, we need to have a sense of vision, the grandiose of the vision that captures the feelings, right? It doesn't have to be a palace. It doesn't have to be all gilded in gold. We just need to capture something that you can reflect upon. Then you say, yes, this is us. And so the bite size comes from after you know you want to do something grand in terms of the feelings, then you bite size the steps, one step after another step, it's very digestible. And yet you understand every step will influence what is the next step is going to be, what are the branches, and what are the choices. That gives the client a sense of engagement, input, and be able to chime in so that you can massage. And you tried as a designer, I like to draw, I will give them vignettes and say, this is something I kind of came up with, but it's informed by the site, what's there. It's informed by the research of the place, research of your community's history, research about material opportunities. So you dial it down to a very conceptual level, to the point where they understand. When you explain, everything you do has a reason. Then when you see they're nodding, they understand, then next step, it's much easier to say, okay, from here, we can do these other steps. What are your preferences?
And how did the quotes become a visual element of the garden?
So I want to have the opportunity to tell the stories of the Chinese contribution to the building of Astoria. So I had worked with the Heritage Museum over there. They work with the student in the city, and they have collected a lot of data. So there's census, there are news articles written by non-Chinese about the horrible things, right? But yet the voices from the Chinese community, it's just not there. There isn't anything that's spoken by the Chinese. So I asked the elders, I said, give me some quotes about yourself. None of them wants to say anything. Is that there's nothing to talk about. It's just hardship. It's ugly. I don't want to say anything. Then I asked their children, my generation helpers, members, collaborators, and they said, Dad and Mom never told us anything, and we didn't think of asking them. And then, I panicked. I thought, okay, this is not good. I need to have their voices. So I said, okay, elders, don't talk about yourself. Tell me about your parents, your grandparents, your families. And also that I didn't know, they just opened up the floodgates. That's why all these quotes were coming through so beautifully. And here are a few, if I may read them out. My grandfather brought home salmon cheeks, a delicacy to the Chinese, but a waste to the cannery owners. Another quote. After arriving from China, my dad took a year to save enough money working in San Francisco, and he then walked to Astoria. My mom butchered the frog, put the skin over little peach cans, and let it dry to make drums. My mother graduated with a college degree, but Chinese women seldom had job opportunities, so she settled for a housekeeping offer. Grandma said that Dad was so sick on the boat from China that he would have been fed to the fish if he had died. Now a seafood lab is named after him for the fish feed that he and his team developed. Maybe one more. He prepared clocks with great skills and built cuckoo clocks with everyday materials. So these are just a few of these stories, and that's different from newspaper clippings or census data. These are stories that it's relatable between generations. And these are the quotes that I told my steel artisan. I said, I want the story screen to be filled with floating quotes. It's like you're on a bus, walking on the street, you overheard someone. It didn't have the beginning and didn't have the end, but you just capture a little bit of what's been heard, and it gives you a little bit of a moment to ponder, what is that? And that pondering moment is what I would like people to bring that to themselves every day, that there gotta be a time to ponder that is more self-reflective. So that's how these quotes became the beginning, so-called the entry screen to the beginning of one's experience when you pass through the moon gate.
Did all of the quotes come from Astorians?
So the story screen are the quotes coming from the elders, and some of them are from their children, which one of them, she became a major donor. She said, "Swen, without this project, I would have never heard these stories from my dad." And she's in her late 50s. And this is the first time she heard about her dad's story, about his parents. And I thought, well, that's great, because then everybody can relate to the project. So these are the quotes of people who are so-called the modern days Chinese community members. And then they're reminiscing the past, right? And then yet this whole garden, I mentioned earlier that I don't want this to be a reconciliatory project. I don't want us to be frozen in time that is only talking about the ugliest moment. And Chinese history has thousands and thousands of years of civilization, literature, science, arts and craft, medicine. And so I want the hardship, and then, you know, hardship comes in to every community, every race. And so I want this to be able to say, yes, there's hardship, but you have to put that into the context of where this culture came from. Where is that value in the society that we all share and pass on from generation to generation? So there are three bronze scrolls that horizontally intersect the vertical story screen. And the horizontal three bronze scrolls had quotes from Confucius, Laozi, and also a 13th century nursery rhyme. They are all in Chinese and English. And so hoping that that allows one's awareness of the fact that we as a community tie to something beyond us that brought us here today, with that sense of pride, value, and sensibility. And so people would say, well, the vertical screen is all the rusty steel water that's going to drip onto the bronze scroll, and it's going to have this chemical interaction, it's going to corrode. I said, isn't that the life of an immigrant? Isn't that what they came to a different place called a new home, that they pick up a little bit of different things? And so that kind of sums up that the awareness of we live in a society that is so focused on, it has to be perfect, it has to be flawless, it has to be stainless. And yet I think we forgot to look at grandma's wrinkles, the gray hair that we eventually all have. Don't be shy about showing them off, because like one old friend told me, I can always gain more experience. But damn it, I have also brought in a lot of experience. Recognize that. Don't judge me based on what I don't know, but value me and honor me based on what I already have that I can share. This is what I would like this garden to be or achieve.